Hi, everybody. I'm Traven Rice. I'm the arts and culture editor and co-founder of The Lowdown. And this is The Lowdown Culture Cast. And we're here at P&T Knitwear at 180 Orchard. And I'm very excited to be talking with culture changers. And today I'm speaking with somebody who I would say has documented very authentic cultural heritage and change in a creative way that's accessible to everybody, mm-hmm. including small children. So I'm here today with Ellen Weinstein. And Ellen is a New York-based author-illustrator who was born and raised in New York City. She's a graduate of Pratt Institute and New York's High School of Art and Design. Ellen's work is in the permanent collection of the Library of Congress. She has judged numerous illustration competitions and wrote and illustrated 5 Stories, which is being published by Holiday House this coming month in April. She's illustrated quite a few other books, one of them that was published at the Museum of Modern Art, and has lectured and taught around the country and internationally. And just a little note about this beautiful book called 5 Stories that we're going to talk a little bit more about. But you, your grandparents and great-grandparents came to the Lower East Side as part of the great wave of immigration from Eastern Europe in the early 1900s. So you say that your family has lived on the Lower East Side for the past 120 years, and you're still here today. Mm-hmm. And so please tell us about this book, 5 Stories, if you were just describing it to somebody.
Well, I would say it's to introduce young readers to the Lower East Side and immigration in America, but also, as you said, for all ages. So it is about 5 children from 5 different cultures and in 5 different decades live in the same building on the Lower East Side over the course of a century. And the book begins with the story of my grandmother and continues to the present.
And what inspired the book?
Well, About 10 years ago, I think I was teaching. I went to Russia to teach a workshop, which sounds kind of outrageous now, but I went to Russia to teach a workshop, and I was curious because that's where my grandparents were from, although now it's considered Belarus, but back then it was Russia. And I remember, like, on the very long airplane trip home, I was reflecting and thinking about it and wondering what that was actually like for my grandmother and my grandparents and great-grandparents. And I think I was also thinking I probably had more in my suitcase going for 2 weeks than they came, you know, when they moved to America, the Lower East Side, knowing they were never going to return. And that just really kind of also, as sometimes questions do, raised a lot of other questions. And as I was thinking about her story, and, you know, of course, everybody's family story is unique and special to them. But the more I thought about it and reflected on it, I thought, well, what makes my grandmother's story is not so much that it's unique, but how universal it is in so many ways, especially down here. The culture of the Lower East Side is so integral, you know, to talking about immigration in America, and you can't talk about immigration to America without talking about the Lower East Side. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a really rich, rich history here of all the layers of culture that make the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. I was able to take a good look at the book, and it's not only illustrated beautifully, but so the idea is that it's a 5-story walk-up, and there's a different generation and cultural family mm-hmm. that's come over on each floor. And so, and it all leads, one leads to another, kind of learning about mm-hmm. the family that's there and their, where they've come from and their history. And it really is a beautiful representation of the true melting pot that you're going to find here in New York City and here in the Lower East Side, I would say. And so how did you decide which cultures, and could you talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, that was a lot of going back and forth on that. I mean, once I settled on, you know, I was thinking about the different stories and how there's so many different people here. And then once I settled on the idea of a tenement building being really just serving as a filter or a container for the stories. That gave me five to work with. So that, you know, provided some structure. I knew I wanted to begin it with my grandmother and continue it to the present. So then it was a question of like who was in between. And it was hard. You know, I tried to follow some of the major waves of immigration here, like the Puerto Rican community. And, you know, some of it was just hard choices, and I could have written, and I could still write 20 books with different characters in them and representing different cultures. And I did a lot of it through interviews and oral histories and oral history transcripts. So part of it came down to who I had access to.
Yeah. Right?
So that was also being able to dig into friends and neighbors' family histories, but also knowing that there was going to be an aggregate of a number of those histories, so I wasn't relying on one person for each of those stories.
So you kind of made a combination of based on everything that you heard from different...
Yeah, they were composited. Were composited characters.
Yeah, so it starts, and it's also different time periods. Mm-hmm. So the time period it starts in is when?
1914, and in picking the time periods too, some of it, of course, went with the different characters and when they were here. But I also wanted to provide a structure of, there's 1914 is when my grandmother comes, 1932 talks about an Italian family, 1965 is a family from the Dominican Republic, 1989 is a family that migrated from Puerto Rico, and then it brings us up to the present. And I wanted to pick time periods that had significant events going on globally and domestically. But also had stories that feel relevant today. Like when I was revising the manuscript and finalizing it, it was the end of 2020. So the idea of like renewal, there's going to be a new president, there's optimism, you know, when FDR was elected. 1965 was another momentous year with an immigration act that allowed, you know, opened up immigration again, but also the Voting Rights Act. And voting rights is very relevant today and something we're still fighting for. 1989, another momentous year of banner headlines every day of what was going on globally, but also globally, you know, we were talking about climate change back then. And I felt like out of the global events happening then, that was the one that would be most relevant to young readers now. And I also wanted to maybe move it a little bit past the largest, you know, blight kind of that people associate with New York City in that time period, but bring it a little closer to the present.
What do you mean the blight? Like in the...
Like in the 70s.
70s.
Yeah.
That time period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and bring it a little closer to the present so there wouldn't be such a gap between now and going back in time.
And then and you mentioned we come up to the present, and what's, which family is that?
And that's with a family from Fuzhou, China. Us up to the present, which, you know, is a big part of the neighborhood as well. You know,
it's so interesting. It's just sort of ways to track, you know, kind of the waves of immigration, how that changes internationally, and depending on who's coming at what time.
Right.
You do find waves, right? Which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, there are waves, and, you know, and again, it's all, you know, past this prologue, we're now in another big wave of migration, and we don't know what the stories, you know, are going to be with people who are coming here now. We'll see if they have the same opportunities that my grandparents had, you know, to make a new life somewhere. But it continues.
Yeah.
Hopefully continues. It's so there's always some horrible rhetoric going around the topic.
Yeah. Has that been a theme that you noticed?
I think I mean, it's a consistent theme, you know. It also seems to come up during election years for some odd coincidental reason. But yeah, I mean, historically, it's been a theme, you know. And you can look at, you know, these posters and things from the early 1900s, and, you know, one group gets demonized, and then the next group, and then the next group, and then, you know, it continues. But at the same time, there's all this like wonderful richness and building that's happening because of all these different groups of people coming. So there's the dichotomy of the American psyche in some ways.
Right. Yeah, I never. Yeah, it's a push pull. We don't mm-hmm. want you here, but oh, look how interesting and diverse right. our culture is.
Exactly.
We're so proud of that.
Right.
But you can't come here. Well, yeah, my grandparents came here.
Yeah, exactly.
Also.
Yeah.
By the way.
So that's the way it goes.
So my question is about your process as far as author-illustrator, because that's not always the case. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's one or the other, and sometimes you're working with one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, you started doing the research, or did you have images in mind first, or what comes first?
Well, in this case, I started doing it was a long process. I started doing the research and thinking about it. Like, I think the seeds of the idea were there like 10 years ago, and it took a while to formulate. I did a lot of research. I talked, and that was something I really enjoyed about the process of creating this book, is that, you know, I also do a lot of editorial assignments, and those projects, you know, sometimes I'm researching conflicts around the globe, I'm looking into exoplanets and the solar system. It's a wide variety of subject matter. But here, you know, I'm talking about home for me, grew up here, lifelong resident of the Lower East Side. And so for my research, I was just like, I don't want to sit here and Google. I'm going to go talk to people. And so a lot of my research involved, you know, meeting with historians at the Tenement Museum, Eldridge Street Synagogue, Seward Park Library. I went and talked to students and principals at PS 42 and PS 1, the dual language school for Asian studies in Seward Park campus, mm-hmm. you know. And and I found that there were, you know, people really, you know, eager to share information and eager to share stories, which was great. And then, of course, I spoke to friends and interviewed their relatives, and it was just this kind of like ongoing accumulation kind of process of just even before I started writing. And then so it started kind of back and forth, you know, and then I just started having images of what I wanted to do visually, which, you know, a lot of the books I loved as a kid were these things where it just had a lot of detail, and I'd sit there and look at all the different detail and try to find what changed, you know, from page to page. So I wanted to create, you know, show rather than tell a lot of the changes that take place, because we're all shaped by the time and place that we live in, and things like technology, what's happening in the culture, what's happening in the world, you know, they affect us, especially in our formative years. So some of that kind of detail, you know, started to come into mind of like how I wanted to capture it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a back and forth process. You know, when you're just working in the world of possibility, at some point you have to start making some choices to actually make something. So, you know, I started writing a structure for it.
I was going to say, it sounds like after all that research, really, when you're doing the writing, that the job becomes kind of about editing.
Mm-hmm.
About deciding what's not going to fit versus
right. Yeah, a lot of it. And I think for any form, you know, sometimes what you leave out is just as important, because you can overcrowd, emphasize the wrong things, you know. Not the wrong things, but I think in some initial drafts, I was like really over-fascinated with like the technology and those kind of aspects of it. And then I had to kind of step back from it and go, no, it's about the stories. You know, it's not about, you know, like all the details. Like, those are supplemental, mm-hmm. But it's really about the people and the stories,
mm-hmm.
and that they're not of equal importance.
And it's a beautiful through line where the child comes over and has something that they're interested in doing and grows up to mm-hmm. do it, and then you go to the next family and the child there knows the person below who mm-hmm. has become whatever that is that they are dreaming of doing when they come.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that kind of exists here too, you know, where you have, I will say that because it's a neighborhood I'm most familiar with, but I will say the Lower East Side does have a lot of multi-generations, a lot of continued history, people who grew up here. There's a good number of OGs like myself that I know who grew up here and continue to live here. And then, of course, you have the stores that, the businesses that continue because the next generations take them on, like Russ and Daughters, Katz's, Moscot, Yonah Schimmel, Casa Adela, you know, to name a few, you know, and those are, you know, those are real anchors in
oh,
the community
absolutely.
As well.
And I feel that they become more and more unique and precious as sort of the rest of the culture, even in New York City, becomes more homogenized, more corporate.
Exactly. Yeah, because when I have, when friends come and visit me and we go to one of our local spots down here, they're always like, oh, it's still a neighborhood. And I'm like, yeah, it's a community. It's not, you know, it's not just a bunch of chain stores one after another.
Right, which is becoming very unusual. I was speaking with somebody who was talking a little bit about that historically. And so one of the ways that I think they were mentioning the reason it stayed feeling like such a neighborhood is perhaps because we still have the five-story tenement buildings. And those still exist and haven't been demolished or you know, overdeveloped. And so there's only so much you can do in that tenement building. They're small.
Right. And unfortunately, as sometimes, you know, we see that they come down and then like this new kind of high-rise gets squeezed in or takes over. So, you know, I do wish we had more preservation laws down here that would keep and maintain that, because, you know, that's going to change. If those go away, you know, that changes everything. It changes because the rents go way up and it's already getting very hard for people to live down here. But then it becomes impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, so it really is about that tenement story building, I think. And was this the first project that you sort of were looking at your personal history and story?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's also because it was self-directed, right? So a lot of the things I've done are, you know, kind of more of external, you know, like I illustrated a book with the Museum of Modern Art on Yayoi Kusama. I wrote and illustrated another book about extraordinary people and famous people's superstitions and rituals. So those are kind of looking out, but this was more, more internal. And yet, you know, I still, even with going into my grandmother's story, I still wanted to keep all the stories kind of universally the same amount of information. So it wasn't like we were going to know all this about her and everybody else was going to be this mystery, because I always want to leave enough narrative space there, hopefully for like a, you know, a kid to come in and see part of themselves in each of the characters.
Yeah, I think that's really beautifully done. So what would you say, what did you learn about you and your family along the way? And also just, you know, historically, I mean, were there things you were surprised by?
Well, there were some things that were, you know, surprised by in terms of like some of the challenges people face and some of the, you know, it was universal, no matter what time period or where people came from. I also found that interviewing people from the Lower East Side, we all have a common refrain, back in the day. And it doesn't matter if you're talking about 3 weeks ago, 40 years ago, we all say back in the day. And then I had a really funny kind of personal family thing come up because, and I may vaguely remember him, but I did have a great uncle who had a store on the Lower East Side who stayed. You know, he was here from when my grandmother and great-grandparents came till about early 1980s, late 70s. And his name was Louis, and he was run over by a trolley as a kid and lost his leg. And my mother kept saying that my great uncle Louis owned this like fishing tackle store on the Lower East Side. I was like, wait, he had a wooden leg, and it was like a Yiddish Captain Ahab. Like, it just sounded too outrageous to be true. And I thought it was just like one of these family myths that somehow got passed down. And then when I was doing research, I had, you know, I was going through a bunch of books, looking at pictures of the Lower East Side. And then I see this picture. It's like 139 Orchard Street, Louis Tackle Store. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, this really exists? So then I belong to all these different Lower East Side Facebook groups. So I shared the picture and asked if anybody knew him. And people did. I got all these comments. And apparently he was, shall we say, a little rough around the edges. And he was quite a character. One person described him as cantankerous, but I guess it was, you know, he had like pushed somebody down the stairs with his crutch one time that was trying to break into the store. Like, he lived in the back and the store was in the front, which was fairly common. back then. And he used to take people out on these fishing expeditions in Long Island and stuff. So he was a Yiddish Captain Ahab, I guess.
How funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really funny. So I think we always ask, and it's always a conversation around, boy, you must have really seen a lot change. But you really must have seen a lot change.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I've seen a lot change, and I've also seen a lot kind of remain the same, too. And I will also say, as somebody who kind of came of age during the urban blight years, I don't know how blighty it was because I had nothing to compare it to. It was just, to me, like where I lived and what was, you know, kind of like normal at the time. Mm-hmm. But I did find, you know, in going through and researching different things, there's a certain, I wouldn't say mythologizing, but a little bit of like a fetishizing of that time period as well. And I think a lot of it just, you know, it comes down to how you frame the narrative, you know. And, you know, and if you're going to look for pictures of 1970s or 80s New York, it doesn't matter where you want to go. You're getting on that subway, you know, and it's going to be a really dirty, horrible subway car. But at the same time, there were a lot of other things happening, you know, and those things could coexist. I mean, that was the beginning of the community garden movement. There was like the New Yorican poets. I mean, there were all these really positive things, but you have to really dig or have some personal knowledge of it to know that those things coexisted.
Right, because what you hear is that it was a dangerous city, it was a disaster, nobody was here, it was just drug dealers and it wasn't safe. And
oh yeah, I mean, I see photos of the Lower East Side from that time period. I'm like, oh my God, that looks perilous. And I'm like, I could have been walking down the street, you know, sipping an egg cream like 5 minutes before that photo was taken. And it just depends on what you focus on.
Yeah, that's too. Right.
And those things coexist. I mean, blight and renewal, you know, can happen at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, I think creatively, those have always gone hand in hand. I mean, as an artist, I think coming to New York, the same kind of, I would say, I don't know, glamorizing almost in a way of like, well, those were the real, real creative days, you know, were like in the late 70s, early 80s. And by the time we got to the 90s, it was all over. You know, it was all about like, well, that was when the artists could just come and it was being this creative spirit. But there's been, generations and decades of times for artists to come and find their way and create.
Right. It's sort of almost phrased like a subway. Oh, you just missed it. You just missed it. If you were just here 5 minutes earlier, you would have been here when it was happening. But I would also say about the art world, too, you know, and there's always like a lot of talk about the galleries in the East Village and what was happening there. But I think the mural art, like Lee Quiñones was creating these really beautiful murals. I went to junior high school 56. You know, I went to public schools all throughout. And I remember when he would have, I mean, they were just like a gift to the community, his beautiful murals. And I, you know, and there was all this other work happening that was outside of the gallery scene back then, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it felt like there was a community of all different types of artists always, a sort of a gathering of performance art and music and dance, you know. And yes, all different types of mediums of art, I would say.
Right, and it was happening in all different parts by all different people and not just, you know, I think there's also this idea that people, you know, come to New York to do all these great things. I'm like, well, people are from New York and they do interesting things too.
That's very true, good point. You mean the native New Yorkers.
Right, like the E.B. White, Three New Yorks.
Yeah. What do you feel like you hope a young person looking at the book takes away from it?
Well, I hope they see themselves in some of the characters, but I hope they also become curious about the characters that they don't recognize, right? And I think for all of us, just being able to understand that everybody has a story, everybody's family has a story. And if you're open to receiving it, you know, and hearing it, you can learn a lot about other people and about, you know, your neighborhood and the world that you live in.
Yeah. It really does feel like a love letter to the Lower East Side. I think it comes across as that, for sure.
Yeah, thank you. That was my intention.
Oh, good. So the book is coming out in April, and there will be a book launch party here at PNT Knitwear. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, April 12th at 7 o'clock, I'll be in conversation with fellow lifelong Lower East Sider filmmaker and journalist Lori Gwen Shapiro. And so that'll be a lot of fun. So that's going to be like kind of more of like an all ages discussion between the two of us. So PNT Knitwear, April 12th, 7 o'clock. Don't miss it.
Excellent. And also be sure to check out the book, Five Stories. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having me. I've been a longtime reader of the blog, and I think you provide such a vital community resource, especially in these days of disappearing local news. You know, we really do need our local news, so thank you for continuing it.
Oh, thank you I appreciate it. Thank you for reading. Thank you for the note.